Welcome to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman. In this special episode, I'll be talking to Danny Smith, better known as Danny Boy from Friends of Foam, who is a moderator on their message boards. He's on to have a discussion on the Q&A series they've been doing on their website. Along with that, I'm going to get Danny's thoughts on all the Foam moves so far. We have much to discuss, but before I do anything, I have to welcome Danny to the show. Danny, how you doing?
How you doing, Russ? You right, mate?
I am well. Thank you for joining me today.
That's all right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, listen, I look forward to talking to you today about Friends of Foam and yourself. But let's start with talking about you. How did you become a Foam supporter?
I didn't really have a choice, to be honest. I think I was born one. My family have been going Fulham since the 40s. My granddad started it off. He passed it on to my mum. When I was first born, there was a bit of a dispute who I was going to support. My dad's a Man United fan, and he tried to take me down the path to hell, supporting the Red Devils. I had a few tops as a toddler, but nah, the black and white shone through. I've always been a Fulham fan, and yeah, my family, I'm really close to my family. My sister goes, and now my kids go. Two of my kids got season tickets. So yeah, there was no other club for me.
That's fantastic to hear, Danny. Let's now talk about friendsoffoam.com. And I've been talking to Scott Tanfield, who started friendsoffoam.com. He thought it'd be great to have you on, and I look forward to talking to you about the website, about you. But let's talk about your involvement in Friends of Foam. How did it begin?
Well, when my granddad died, being from South East London, I was surrounded by Millwall fans and people like that. I was the Fulham fan, so I sort of lost, when my granddad died, I lost that, you know, that bond of being able to talk about Fulham on a daily basis. So I'd always been a reader of Friends of Fulham, and I decided it was time to join, to talk about it, you know, whenever I wanted. And yeah, I just went from strength to strength, really. After about a year, they decided to ask me to be a moderator. I said no at first, because I thought it'd take up too much time, and then I felt a bit guilty, so I agreed to it, and yeah, I've been there ever since.
What has been the most challenging thing about being a moderator? I'm curious.
What's the most challenging thing? People seeing you as someone who is superior to them, almost like a student and a teacher, and I hate that. I hate the title. If I didn't want to do it, I wouldn't do it, because it is voluntary, and I try to go out of my way to make it clear to everyone I'm just like them. At the end of the day, whether I'm a moderator or just a normal member, I want what's best for Friends of Fulham. So by deleting irrelevant posts that have no, you know, link to the conversation going on, or, you know, anything political, religious, swearing. You know, my daughter, she's only 10. She goes on there sometimes. So whether I'm a moderator or a member, I like it to be clean. So that's the idea. I don't like, the challenging thing is trying to do it so that people don't look, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. And it sounds like you do a very good job of trying to keep it clean. I guess that would be the best way to put it, Danny. You just want the website to be clean. Okay, Danny, let's now get into a discussion on the FOF reviews. Please just tell everyone what they are and how they can access them on Friends of Foam.
Okay, so the FOF reviews is basically it's a play on the word interview, because that's exactly what they are. FOF is the abbreviation a lot of people use for Friends of Fulham, because it's FOF, FOF. So we just thought it'd be clever to call it FOF review rather than, you know, your average interview. Originally, it was an idea that Darren, who people associated with Friends of Fulham will know him better as Westcliff White, he's part of the team with me that run Friends of Fulham. He did brilliant to get access into the club via Sarah Brooks. And I've got to thank Sarah for her help while she was here. You know, she's the one that gave us our break with Tim Flowers. Tim Flowers, the goalkeeping coach, who was the first one we did. And the initial plan was to do all of them via the club, with the board, talking to, you know, the Khans and the players and stuff. But obviously, Sarah left, and then it was the running for the playoffs. Then all the players are on holiday now. It's the pre-season, and you know, football clubs are busy 24/7. So we appreciate their help, but we also understand that the access is not going to be as much as we'd like. So in order to stop the credibility of the FOFA views going down, we decided, well, I decided to sort of volunteer myself as a scout, and I go out on social media and stuff like that, and I try and get independent interviews with, you know, ex-players, you know, supporters that have maybe done something a bit different, a bit unique to the average fan, you know, dedicated a lot of time, to voluntary time and stuff like that to other supporters. So yeah, it's really just a way of on one side of it with Darren getting up to date news and an insight into what's happening at the moment, and with me, you know, reflecting on some great times and giving some people that may not get the limelight they deserve, you know, their opportunity to tell their story. That's basically it.
I find them very interesting, and we're going to be talking about several of them coming up. But before we do that, what do you have upcoming for these FOF reviews?
Well, we got a few upcoming. As I said to you a minute ago, it's very difficult to get anything concrete with the club. You know, until it happens, it's very hard to promise it and rely on it. So I know in principle, Darren's got two lined up with gentlemen Jim and Jamie, and another one with Tony Khan, which,
Excellent.
yeah, I'm looking forward to them. So looking forward to seeing what Tony Khan is saying about. I don't know if we'll be able to do it before the end of the transfer window. I'm not sure, but certainly before the end of the year. So yeah, hopefully we're all still in a good mood by then, and it gets received very well. On my side, you've got a few, you've got a bit of variety. I've got one with you know, the great Stan Brown, who played for Fulham in the 1960s, in the top flight alongside the likes of George Cohen and Johnny Haynes.
That's great.
Very popular character with Fulham supporters of that generation. You know, very selfless, gave everything for the team. Actually, played in every single position, including in goal. So yeah, unfortunately, Stan, for I didn't realise it at the time, for health reasons, he's not able to answer our questions himself. So on behalf of all Fulham supporters and yeah, everyone associated with Friends of Fulham, you know, I wish him the best in the future and his family as well. But his son has offered to do it on his behalf and answer questions for us as best he can, which I think is fantastic and just shows the Fulham spirit.
That's excellent, and I look forward to seeing that in others as well. I look forward to learning more about these ex-players, Danny.
Oh, the
So,
ex-players. Well, actually, there's a couple more I've got to tell you about
okay.
before we move on. I've got to mention them all because otherwise they might feel a bit short-changed. There's only one F in Fulham's David Lloyd, who created you know, the magazine that is
I
sold
look forward to
several
that.
times a season. Yeah, he's got a lot of stories, a lot of interviews. He's been doing it since the late 80s, so I'm looking forward to hearing what he's got to say. Also, we got one with Rufus Brevett, which I'm really looking forward
Fantastic.
to. And you know, I think that one will be very popular. You know, obviously very current, and you know what he achieved, especially with the Tigana team, and he was a very popular player at the time. So yeah, that's on the player side of it, and the last one is with Ivan Berry, who is the current match day announcer at the Cottage. He had big shoes to fill when Diddy Hamilton decided to call it a day. And to be fair to him, I think every season he's gone from strength to strength, and I actually think the club have done a really good job appointing him. So I'm looking forward to hearing how he felt, the pressure he felt when he had to take over from such a legend in Diddy Hamilton. I think that's it for now. I think that's enough.
Well, I got to tell you, my friend, these are very interesting FOF reviews you have coming up. I look forward to reading them. It should be fascinating. So please keep them coming. I look forward to all that you just talked about. Let's talk about some that have already happened. I've actually interviewed this person on Connors Talk, Robert Wilson. Let's start here. I found his FOF review very interesting. What stood out to you?
Oh, what a legend, what a guy, you know, what a gentleman.
Great guy.
He was my very first one. Just by pot luck, I decided, well, he's on Twitter, let's message him. And that's very rare that you can actually directly message anyone on Twitter that's, you know, played football or whatever. So yeah, just a normal guy. He was very, very helpful and very happy to do it. He went into so much detail, and I'm actually going to meet up with him, hopefully before the Norwich game, to buy
Oh,
him a
that's
pint. I
great.
mean, just brilliant, you know, that you can do that of ex-players. I know I've heard a lot about him because he's from a very, very popular team, the 82-83 team that Malcolm McDonald got promoted with. If you talk to anyone from that era, I mean, my mum and dad have always gone on about it. I know I said my dad is a Man United supporter, but really, at heart, he's a Fulham fan, and I think it is a lot to do with that team. And then, of course, the following season, the controversy with the Derby
Yep.
game, missing out on promotion again. If you haven't, you know, if there's any young fans listening, my age or whatever, that don't know what it is, get on YouTube or get
Oh,
on
you
the,
have
you
to
know,
watch it. You
you
have to
have to
see it.
watch it. There's a link to it on the, there's actually a video attached to the FOFA view itself on the website. So you know, and of course, if anybody was there or is old enough to know what it is, it's, you don't need me to explain what it is. It's something that you will never forget, and I'd possibly never forgive.
Yeah, and what's interesting, reading the FOF review of Robert, he's still bitter about it. I think that comes through. He's still upset about it. That's what I got out of his FOF review, is
Well,
his feelings about Derby County. On top of that,
you would be,
yep.
wouldn't you? I mean,
Yes, of
a
course.
career isn't that long, is it? Is it?
No.
So, you know, to be, you know, and you're talking, there wasn't a lot of money back in them days either. So this was purely about football, and you know, the opportunity to play in the top division with that team. You know, a lot of people compare it to Djukanovic's team. A lot of people to compare it to Garner's team. And you know I feel a what if about Djukanovic's team if they had got promoted last year. You know, what they could have done in the Premier League. And it's disgusting in a way that between the FA, the referee, and the Derby supporters, that they've stopped someone like Robert Wilson having that opportunity. And you know, I don't blame him, to be honest with you. And moving away from the negative side of it's lovely that Stan Brown, as I mentioned before, and Robert Wilson, they're both big Fulham fans. So, and I think it's a family tradition. So that's fantastic. That's
Yes.
why I've arranged to meet up with Robert in the Lion before the Norwich game, hopefully,
That's great.
because he goes to all the games. I just think, yes,
He
it's
does,
brilliant. And
and he stays in touch. The one other thing I want to mention about the FOF review, he stays in very good touch with Tony Gale.
I know, and you know, if Robert, if you're listening, I haven't asked you yet because I've wanted him to have his moment in the spotlight. But don't worry, I'm going to be asking for a few phone numbers.
Okay, my friend. All right. Very interesting on Robert Wilson. I highly recommend you going to Friends of Fulham and reading that FOF review. But there are others as well. Let's talk about the one with Tim Flowers. Talk about that one.
Yeah, so that was the first one we did. That was we felt it was received really well. That's why we pursued it and you know, tried to expand the FOFA View series. It was actually done by Darren Westcliff White, and you know, it's different to the ones I do. It's more of an insight into what's happening now, because obviously he's the goalkeeping coach. He talks about, you know, who, how he feels between Bettinelli and Button. You know, whether he feels one's better than the other, what the differences are between them. He talks about how he's had to adapt his style of training to incorporate the way that Djukanovic wants to play. You know, goalkeepers obviously needing to be good with their feet, passing out from the back. So yeah, it's a good insight into what's happening now. It was March, so you know, I think at the time Button was the number one. So it might, if you read it now, it might, you know, you have to bear that in mind. But and he also talks about his career, how he felt about being number two and number three in a couple of World Cups and tournaments for England. You know, how weird that felt, knowing he wasn't going to play because of David Seaman. So yeah, it's such a good insight into the person, as well as, you know, access into, you know, the club.
Yeah, I highly recommend you reading that one as well. It was very interesting, along with Robert Wilson. We have two others I want to discuss before we get into some Fulham news. Let's talk about the one with Billy the Badger creator Kyle Jackson.
Kyle, what a legend. He's a good friend of mine, Kyle. He's a good family friend. You know, I suppose people are probably thinking about turning off now because you've said Billy the Badger and they're probably thinking, what? Why do I want to listen to Billy? Someone talking about Billy the Badger? But you know what? Whether you're an 80-year-old man or you're an 18-year-old, you know, lad, just turned into a man and you support and love Fulham, the thought of Fulham, you know, not existing anymore, whether it be in 10 years' time or in 100 years' time when you're gone, it's terrifying. It breaks my heart. You know, I hope Fulham goes on forever. And like it or not, Billy the Badger is a massive part of securing the next generation. You know, I know from experience, my oldest daughter's 10. When she started going Fulham, it obviously they like going because they're with you. But she didn't know the halftime score. She didn't know who was playing. She couldn't even tell you the opposition. But she knew who was coming out at half time to give her a cuddle and say hello. And that was Billy the Badger. And, you know, if you go in the club shop, the kids don't want, you know, a picture of the players. They want a Billy the Badger teddy. You know, I have that with my youngest kids now. And they absolutely adore him. And I think we're not Man United. We're not Arsenal. I think, you know, the future generations is massive. And, you know, being a family man, I know how much of a good idea Billy was. Yeah, as much as we love Sir Craven the Cottage, have you seen pictures of him?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, well, he hasn't got the same sort of warm, loving, you know, Fulhamish feeling that Billy has. So, you know, no one would have known that about Kyle. You know, if I was him, I would be telling everyone. Yeah, I'd be well proud of the fact that I thought up Billy and it's still going now because he's been going a few years now, Billy. And yeah, I just thought, why not? You know, something different.
Yeah, listen, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's why I'm glad that we're talking about Kyle. And because, listen, I'm a fan of the New England Patriots. And I got to tell you that both of my kids have pictures with Pat Patriot. That's the Patriot version of Billy the Badger. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's why I'm glad that you did that because the younger generation gravitates towards it. And there's, again, nothing wrong with that. So good by you by doing that far review with Kyle. All right. The last one is with the unsung hero friends of Fulham, John Cummins, better known as White JC. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, well, boy, what an unsung hero he is. Obviously, Fulham fan through and through. I suppose if you've got any sort of association with Friends of Fulham whatsoever, whether you just read it from time to time or, you know, you're a member, you could be forgiven for not knowing who he is because he doesn't shout about all the stuff he does behind the scenes. He's solely responsible alongside Scott Tanfield, who tries to help out. He's the owner. It's John's responsibility to sort out if the website crashes or to deal with the hosting company. Just anything, really. Just the day-to-day running behind the scenes of the website, changing things, updating things, you know, approving memberships, removing about 100 spam applicants a week. You know, he puts an awful lot of time into it, and don't forget the daily Fulham news that he does, and he does that on a daily basis. You know, so it, you know, no one else really contributes to that. It is him that puts in that effort. And you know, although, you know, I'll give myself a pat on the back, I put a lot of effort into Friends of Fulham, as we all do in the team. But most people that associate with Friends of Fulham will know who I am. And you could be forgiven for getting confused with him and White Noise, as we discussed before the show. You know, I didn't have a clue who he was. I thought he was White Noise before I become a moderator. And I just thought, you know, same with Kyle. Why not give them their opportunity? You know, he loves Fulham just as much as everyone else. So why not find out a bit more about him?
All right, listen, I think it's great, and I recommend everyone reading about White JC. Definitely check that out. All right, Danny, let's now talk about the latest in Fulham news since we're now getting ready for the new season. Much has happened, so I just want to get your thoughts on several topics. Let's start at the beginning. Let's start at something that I think is pivotal for the new season and moving forward, and that's actually the signing of Ryan Session and his brother Steven, and I don't want to forget Steven because I think that's significant as well. What are your thoughts about this? Were you surprised by this?
Well, I think the longer it went on after his 17th birthday, you did have to get worried, didn't you? You have to think, oh, why hasn't he signed? I think we was all expecting on his 17th birthday that, you know, Fulham was going to be at his door at midnight with a contract. But, you know, they do what Fulham always do. They kept us waiting, keeps us guessing. And I think it's, you know, you could be forgiven for getting his brother because Ryan took all the limelight and was part of the team and did amazing. But for both of them, you know, they seem like really nice lads, you know, great heads on their shoulders and clearly come from a good background, you know, their family and that. And it is so, in all walks of life, especially a footballer, I think for a 17-year-old to make such a mature decision on their career, because let's be honest, it is a very mature decision. It's the right decision. It would have been so tempting to go and play alongside, you know, the likes of, you know, I was going to say Rooney, but maybe not Rooney. big players. We'll just say big players at big clubs. Earn loads of money, play in the Champions League, stuff like that. Even little things like being able to text their friends and say, I play for this club now. You know, just being able to gloat and the lifestyle that comes with it. And to put their career first, and it makes me feel proud because they clearly love it at Fulham. You know, if they really didn't like it at Fulham or didn't have any kind of affection for the club, they wouldn't have signed because, you know, Hyman and Dembele clearly didn't care that much. I suppose you can't really argue Dembele did the right thing because of where his career went. But, you know, who knows what would have happened to Hyman if he had decided to stay and give it another season, you know?
See, I was just about to go there with you, Danny. I was going to use him as an example, Pat Roberts as another example. I know he has done well at Celtic, but look at the journey both of these players, Emerson Hyman and Pat Roberts, have gone on. Then you have someone like Ryan Session, who's staying with Fulham, I think doing the right thing. He's got a wonderful career ahead of him, but he has a chance to improve his game at a place that's going to allow him to improve.
Well, absolutely. And despite the fact that Dembele has, you know, really hit it off in Scotland, you know, no disrespect to any Scottish people, but it's Sunday football, isn't it? It's Sunday league football. You see, I could go and play in that league, you know, let's be honest. So they might shine in that league and really, you know, get the attention that make it seem that they're doing well. But in reality, they're playing against crap players. At least in the Championship, it's definitely a step up. You know, would Celtic get promoted from the Championship? I think it's debatable. And that says it all. What about the other 11? Where would they finish? They wouldn't even be able to enter the Championship. They would get torn apart every week. So, you know, have they made the right career choice by going to Celtic? You know, I don't think they have. You know, they might have a few winners' medals, but their development, I don't think, has gone on. Dembele might get a big move, but going back to Ryan, you know, good for him. Good for him and good for the club. Because at least now, if he goes next year, next summer, we know he's not going to be at Fulham forever. He's too good. But at least now, the club will get the fee that they deserve for him. And it will justify, you know, all the time and effort they've spent on his development, giving him the opportunity at such a young age. And, you know, these big clubs can't just come in and nick him for nothing. You know, because I know we do it to the smaller clubs and it's like a food chain, but it just seems immoral that you could put so much effort into a young lad from such a young age and then they can walk for nothing, pretty much. You know, compensation. Well, we got $500,000 for Dembele, so it wouldn't have been a lot. At least now we can rest assured that, well, he's here, and if he goes, we'll get a lot of money for him. And I think good on him and good on the club.
Absolutely. It was a mature decision. A difficult decision, like you said, when you have all these teams after him. He decides to stay, and I think that's a credit to him, his family, that both of these brothers are staying at Fulham and they get a chance to develop their game even further. I think this is the right place for him. So congratulations to Ryan and Steven Sessegnon. Let's move on. Let's talk about another significant re-signing, and that's of Tom Kearney. We have to talk about this. There was a ton of speculation Newcastle United really wanted him badly, as everything I've been reading. He re-signs with Fulham. How significant is this?
It's massive. I would say probably even bigger than the Sessegnon signing, because, you know, Ryan, as much as it's a mature decision, he has got a couple of years to take his time and make the right decision. I think he's 26, so he's at a different stage of his career.
He's in his prime.
He's in his prime, exactly. So it's here and now. You know, he's ready for that Premier League move. And I think, you know, unless Fulham get promoted, he can't go any higher here. You know, he's already regarded as the best player in this division. So unless Fulham get promoted, he can't get any higher than that at this level. You know, you're regarded as the best player. The next step is Premier League. So again, you know, a massive coup from the club, and you know, I think it says a lot about the club, you know, behind the scenes. I know there's a lot of doubt and a lot of speculation about the club at the moment behind the scenes, but it's clearly a nice environment, because why would Sessegnon and Kearney stay if it was that bad? You know, if it was that horrible and they didn't think the club was going anywhere, why would they stay? So, yeah, no, I'm really chuffed. If I'm being completely honest, I never thought he would leave. There was something about him. I've met him a few times. He loves Fulham, Tom. He really does love it at Fulham. And I think, you know, he's a bit vain. You see, he's the pretty boy, you know, always doing his hair and always the interviews and that. I think he loves the fact that he's the main man. He's, you know, Yes. Everybody loves him. And he's the big fish in a small pond. And
yes.
And if you chucked him out into the ocean, you know, in the Premier League at a big club, you know, the grass isn't always greener. And I don't think every single player out there is motivated by the, you know, the Hollywood lifestyle and the money. I think some players do put their career first and do what makes them happy. And I think Fulham is one of those clubs. You either get it or you don't. And
he's got it.
He got it, exactly. So, you know, long may it continue. And now Parker's gone, you know, give him that armband permanently.
Absolutely. And let me ask you this, and then we'll talk about Scott Parker. That's a great transition into talking about him. But before we do that, I want to go back one last thing about Tom Kearney. I've said it on this show several times. Last season, we were talking about Ross McCormack, the comments that possibly Fulham were building their team around Ross McCormack. And I said, no, they're building it around Tom Kearney. I think it's evident now, Danny, that Fulham have built this team around Tom Kearney. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, how do you build a team around Ross? We basically did that for 2 years anyway.
Didn't work.
He scored a lot of goals and he was very influential, but for being honest, he didn't have a position. He was all over the place, you know, and he was very much for himself, I felt. Everything was about him. And how do you build a team around someone who doesn't have a position, you know? So, Kearney is a bit more straightforward. I think you know his strengths. You know what he can bring to the team. And I think unlike McCormack, I think McCormack needed other players to make him. I think Kearney makes other players look better, if that makes sense.
I agree.
So I think by building the team around Kearney, does that make sense? Do you see where I'm coming from?
It absolutely does, Danny. What he has done is he's made the players around him better by playing with him. They all raised their game. I don't think you got that with McCormack. I know it's a striker, and like you said, he was kind of positionless at times. But with Kearney, his position, his maturity, the way that he puts himself out there, I think players gravitate towards him and raise their game. When they see him as a leader, he leads by example, and I think the players follow.
Yeah, of course they do. Of course they do. You know, he leads by example, you know, and I think on and off the pitch. On and off the pitch with TC, you know,
yep. The
way he's handled the whole transfer speculation, he doesn't cause himself any problems. I mean, you only have to look at McCormack now with Villa and the bloody the gate story.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I just think, if we believe the rumours, the players didn't want him back. You know, when he was looking to go in January, apparently Djukanovic consulted the players and they didn't want him back. And I'm not surprised, because he wasn't a team player, and I think, you know, he was all about, you know, they call him Ross McContract, didn't they? Because he was all about himself, all about securing his own stability and future. And I don't think he really, for 2 seconds, you know, cared about any of the other players. If I'm being honest with you, you know, he was great for Fulham, but, you know, I said it at the time, they need to get rid of him because, you know, he does more harm than good. And, you know, we'll get on to talking about Scott Malone later. I feel that way about Scott Malone's goals, but, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute.
We will, my friend. I look forward to getting your take on Scott Malone. But before we do that, let's talk about Scott Parker. Very interesting that he retired. And I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, I've always respected Scott. You know, he's been a great role model and a professional throughout his career. You know, you only have to see that from the reception he got on Twitter and, you know, and all that from ex-players and stuff. Everybody loves him. And I understand people that feel the goodbye was a bit of an overreaction. You know, he isn't a club legend. Let's point that out. He isn't a club legend. But club where everything around him seems to be changing and going wrong. Scott, off the pitch especially, ambassador for the club and, you know, a great example to the younger players, a lot of whom have come through in the last couple of years. It isn't because they're looking up to someone like Scott Parker. So whilst the world around him seems to be falling apart, I think that bond between the fans and the, you know, the club and, you know, good luck to him. Good luck to him. I think it's a shame that he couldn't have stayed on as a coach. I think, you know, people like that are always got a use around the club. I thought they missed the trick not keeping Karagounis simply for the enthusiasm and the role we could have. You know, hopefully with the getting a few more leaders, because we've certainly lost a good one in Scott. I wish him thinking for all his time here, he's not a Fulham legend, but he's a very, very, and I think that's, you know, a credit to the way he's handled himself his whole career.
Okay, and I understand where you're coming from that. I do want to ask you about this because I was contacted by a Fulham supporter, and I'm just going to paraphrase a little bit of what he messaged me. He has a different view of Scott Parker at Fulham. He actually thought that his wages hurt us. I want to get your thoughts on that. Can you see the other side of this? I understand that Fulham supporters appreciate everything that Scott Parker did, but I also understand why this Fulham supporter contacted me and was, you know, looking back at it a little bit differently, looking a little negative because of the wages that he was on and how maybe it didn't work out as good as some think. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, value for money, it wasn't a good signing, was it? Because, you know, like you said, we got relegated and then his wages were ridiculous, I'd imagine, for a championship club. So, but is that Scott's fault? I don't think so. I think if someone offers you a contract, you sign it, you know. As far as,
right.
He didn't get up relegated, Scott Parker.
Right. I don't blame him.
I don't know, absolutely. You can't blame Scott Parker. I don't think you can hold it against him because I think, you know, he didn't mess around. He didn't go on strike. He didn't, you know, throw his toys out last season when he wasn't playing at all. I thought he did everything he possibly could at his age. And, you know, it's certainly not his fault that the wages he was being paid. You know, I agree it could have been better used, but so could the Mitroglou money. So,
sure.
You know,
exactly.
Is that Scott Parker's fault as well? You know, I don't think that's a fair argument against Scott Parker. I think that's against the club.
I think you bring up a very good point. I think that has more to do with the club. I understand where the support is coming from, but I think you bring up a good point. Maybe you should be looking more at the club than at Scott Parker. You know, he wants to play, and he's getting paid, and he continued to play. So that probably has more to do with the team.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as that supporter has said, you know, worrying about the finances, I think that is probably why Scott has decided to go to Tottenham. You know, Fulham have probably not offered him as good a deal. I think it's probably been more towards a coaching role rather than a playing role. So obviously the wages would have gone down. I find it hard to believe Fulham would have given him a proper contract. And, you know, and it's the right decision, I think. He either become a coach or he leaves. And, you know, he's decided to do both.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right, I have a few more topics to discuss with you. We're going to talk about the two signings together, but before we do that, let's get back and let's talk about Scott Malone. It happened a week after we had the signing of Ryan Session, you know, everyone was in a positive mood. Then you had the signing of Tom Kearney. And I won't say this came out of the blue because I started seeing all the talk on social media about Scott Malone. He ends up leaving and going to Huddersfield Town. What were your initial thoughts on this, and what do you think about it now?
Good luck to him. For that kind of money, I would have driven him there myself, to be honest with you. If you told me back in May, when I was fearing that we would lose the manager, I thought we might lose Kearney. You know, deep down, I thought Kearney would stay, but you always had that worry. Session. And if you told me back then that we was going to still have the manager and have the others tied down to new contracts and Scott Malone was going to go for $3.5 million going towards $5 million, as well as Hozabed for nearly $5 million, I would have bitten your hand off. I really would. You know, as much as I love Scott, at the end of the day, I think people were blinded by the fact that he wasn't Jazz Richards. I think that has a lot to do with how good people actually think he was. It was an unbelievable bit of business from the club, an unbelievable signing in the circumstances. And, you know, to be fair to him, for most of the season, he was outstanding. He really was. But he had a lot of blips where he was a liability. You know, in the final run-in at the end of the season, when Ream really stepped up and turned into Rio Ferdinand, you know, we had, you know, Fredericks on one side, who I would say is just as much of a liability defensively as Malone, but he has the speed to so you don't really notice it. He sort of like disguises his
weaknesses,
his lack of defensive nous, if you like, because he's so fast. And that speed offers something that Malone can't. And, you know, I actually thought Malone was the weak link, if you include Kalas. I thought he was the weak link in the back four. And a lot of the goals we conceded, I didn't think it was Kalas and Reem's fault. I thought a lot of the time they got isolated because, you know, we did what, you know, you don't hear of a lot in football. Both fullbacks bombed on at the same time. And with Malone, it was a bit too much. And I'm not saying that was his fault. I just think, you know, yes, he scored 7 goals, but he also got caught out of position a number of times where we could have kept 7 clean sheets. And if you had taken away 10 of the goals we scored and given us a few more clean sheets, we probably would have finished in the top 2. And, you know, I remember seeing, I didn't go to the Villa game that was on TV in the last few games of the season. And Malone got taken off for Cabano. And within a minute, we scored. But Malone's reaction to being substituted was like, how dare you take me off? Why are you taking me off and leaving Sessegnon on? And he did the same thing in the second leg against Reading. He got taken off and he was livid, really challenging the manager and talking to the bench as if, you know, how dare you take me off? And, you know, I might be wrong, but it didn't seem like a lot of love lost between Djukanovic and Malone. And I think that would back up the theory, that, you know, the rumour that the club didn't even stand in his way, didn't even try and keep him. And maybe the club see what I saw, that, you know, as good as he was, his goals papered over a lot of cracks that were weaknesses in his game. I don't think he was the best passer of the ball. You know, Sessegnon's a better crosser, for certain. I thought he was vulnerable defensively, but so is Sessegnon. So I really do hope they sign a more defensive-minded fullback, because we've got to remember, in Malone and Frederick's defence, we didn't have any strikers. So the likes of Aluko and Ayite were having to play wingers and strikers, and at times drifting in, we become very narrow. And I think we were very reliant on Malone and Fredericks to get forward. So yeah, I'm not blaming Malone. I'm not blaming Malone at all. I think maybe the approach was slightly too attacking, and it's great to watch, but in reality, I think we need a more defensive-minded fullback to give us a better balance, and hopefully a couple of strikers.
Okay, very interesting way that you're looking at this. And it's funny because Mike Gregg has told me off air, and he also told us on Cottage Talk that he believed, we talked about moves coming up, and this was a while ago. He said that if someone came in for Malone, I'm paraphrasing because I don't know exactly the way Mike put it, but he thought that his value wouldn't be any more high than it would be right now. This is the time to do it. If you were going to do it, this is the time, because his value would be very high. Like I said, I'm paraphrasing. But
well, Absolutely.
The amount of money that you probably got, Danny, this is probably the right move.
Well, you know, people have to be realistic. You know, it's a popular term used in football at the moment, financial fair play. But I don't want the club to go down the QPR route or the Villa route of giving, you know, John Terry 100 grand a week. I admire the club for trying to find these gems and make a profit out of them. You know, Fulham have always been a selling club. Whether you go back to the 60s when they sold Alan Mullery, you know, to fund the Hammersmith stand, you know, the roof.
Right.
The roof of the Hammy end, you know. You know, he didn't want to leave. The club told him he had to go. So, you know, it's no surprise that we sell players. But the key for me is that we're not raising money to fund better players for the team by selling our best players. We're selling average players. Hozabed, who never even played last year, and yet somehow we've managed to get a higher fee in for him than we've paid for him.
That's right.
Unbelievable bit of business.
Absolutely.
You know, and I would imagine most of the season we didn't even pay his wages because he was out on loan.
Right.
You know, and then you've got Scott Malone, who, you know, as good as he was, you know, he's replaceable. And don't tell me he's not replaceable, because we've just been given $3.5 million for him, for goodness sake. You know,
right.
We got him for free. So if we got him for free and managed to sell Jazz Richards as part of the bloody deal, then I reckon you can get three Scott Malones. And it, you know, at the end of the day, if they're going to raise $10 million by selling Malone and Hozabed instead of Kearney, that can only be a good thing.
I think that to me,
you have to be realistic,
right? And that to me is the big point behind this. Sometimes you can't keep everyone. If you're going to keep Tom Kearney and Ryan Session, well, then possibly someone has to go, and then you reinvest that money. Those players that I just mentioned, Kearney and Session, are untouchables. I think Johansson, untouchable. I think McDonald, for my book, untouchable. But for me, Scott Malone is not untouchable. If you can get something decent for him, you do it. That's why I was not against this. Do they need a left back? Absolutely. But they got a good amount of money for it. All right, my friend, we do have to wrap this show up soon. So before we do that, I want to ask you about the two signings. We actually have one today. We're recording this on Friday. That's Ibrahima Cisse. And last week, we also had the signing of center back Marcelo Diallo. And I actually watched him a little bit play in that friendly, which was interesting. He's a big player. He's big. That's all I'm going to say. He's big.
Is he really?
Are your thoughts on these signings?
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't know a lot about either of them. I know what positions they play in. You know, Diallo, is that how you say it? Diallo? I don't know. It doesn't really matter, I suppose. His background suggests, you know, he's been on the books of Real Madrid and Juventus, not really got anywhere, spent a lot of time in the second division of Spain. It doesn't get the pulse racing, if I'm being completely honest, but I think that's unfair because I don't know anything about him.
Sure.
You know, I hope he's not the replacement for Kallas. I certainly hope, you know, the stats people haven't got that one wrong. But, you know, I don't want to say too much about him because it'd be unfair. But if I'm being honest, I think he's a squad player at best, and he's probably, you know, I think it's one of those low risk, at a good age signings that if it comes good, great. They'll make a bit of money on it. If it don't, they've not lost nothing.
And that's kind of the way. I'm sorry, Dan, to cut in. The way I look on both of these signings, low risk, high reward. If it works out, great. Like you said, I actually, you know, these are players that we're not that familiar with, but on the face of it, they look like potential squad players, and you need squad players. I don't have any problem with either one of these.
Absolutely. And, you know, even in, you know, people need to be reminded, even in the Premier League era, we didn't spend, you know, people said Alfie stopped spending money, you know, the last few years. Well, over the course of, you know, 12 seasons in the Premier League, I think we only signed four players in, you know, got to double figures. You know, Andy Johnson, let's recap on Andy Johnson. He, you know, was great in the year we finished seventh, but the year we got to the Europa League final, we missed the whole season for injury.
That's right.
You know, and we ended up losing him on a free to QPR. It's a great bit of business. 10 million down the drain. Brian Ruiz, you know, at times a genius, at times bloody useless. Let's be honest. You know, even in the Championship, he didn't stand out, I didn't think.
No.
And, you know, this is a guy we spent like 10, 11 million on and, you know, basically lost him for peanuts. And Mitroglou, what happened there? You know, I mean, when Hodgson was in charge, you know, we signed the likes of Hangeland and Nevland, who kept us up.
That's
you know,
right.
We signed Mitroglou, who didn't even get off the bloody stretcher. So, no, we made a loss on every single player that we've signed over 10 million, in reality, apart from McCormack.
That's a good point.
Apart from McCormack, if we're being honest, the club sold him at the perfect time and it was very lucky. Because if you look at him now, yeah, we pulled Villa's pants down, didn't we? So, you know, how can you criticise the club for wanting to find bargains and make profit on players? You know, money doesn't buy you success. Is it a good idea to spend 100 grand a week on a 36-year-old who is Chelsea through and through and doesn't really give a shit about Villa? You know,
I think it's a horrible move. I think that you have to have a mix, Danny, and that's how we'll end this show before we get to talking at the very end. I just want to mention this. I've always been one that you need to pay for quality. Okay, I have no problem paying for quality, but you also need to find other players that can help you. It's not about how much you pay for a player. It's finding the right players. You could spend next to nothing on Diallo. What if Diallo turns out to be Hangouin? I'm not saying he is, but what if he does?
Absolutely. Which is why I was very reluctant to write him off. You know, it didn't get me excited, but you know, I'd never heard of Hangouin. I'd never heard of loads of players that we've signed, you know? So,
At this point, we just don't know. And I'm just saying, just give these guys a chance, these new players that come in. Let's see if they work out. Maybe they will turn into something, and then, you know, like you said, then it's like found money, and it's low risk, high reward. All right, my friend, I know I have to get you.
I can carry on if you want, just for a couple of minutes.
Sure. Okay. Not a problem.
I was just gonna say, I think a lot of supporters see a lot of comfort in household names they're familiar with, Championship players, Premier League players. But if you look at the inflated prices, you know, some of the fees people are paying for Tom Ince and, you know, that Sahori who plays for Cardiff, I read Hull had been quoted 12 million. I mean, no wonder the club are going to Belgium and France and places like that and finding, you know, better players. I mean, Ayew is a better player than Tom Ince, that's for certain. And he cost half the money that Huddersfield have paid for him. I just think the club are doing the right thing. What more can you say on it? You know, I'm not a Khan apologist. You know, for the first 3 years, I thought the way he run the club was a disgrace. I feared that we was going to go down the Blackburn and Venky's route. But you know, you've got to give credit where it's due when they start learning their lessons. And you know, with Ty Dan, Seth and John, the amount of money they've spent on the training ground, investing in the building across the road, the BBC studio thing, you know, they're investing money in the right areas. I think maybe we need a striker, and strikers cost money. So if it comes to it that, you know, the case of we've bid 7 million and someone wants 8 million, then they need to do it now, because I think that's what hurt us in the end. The transfer window, the last one was amazing, but signing Martin on the last day of the season ruined everything. So,
I agree.
It is about a balance, but I don't think you can criticise the club for selling Malone and for trying to find bargains.
Now, listen, I'm right there with you. And on the cons, I understand all of the criticism over the years. Like you said, the first 3 years were horrible, and they deserve criticism for it. But they also, you know, I wouldn't say praise. I wouldn't give them praise. I would just say credit for turning things around, learning from your mistakes. Because, listen, I'm a fan of the New England Patriots, Danny. And for years, they were horrible. And new owners come in, and they made mistakes. Eventually, they got it right. It's learning from your mistakes and then pushing forward from that point on. If they have fully learned from their mistakes, then we might be in good shape moving forward. That, to me, is the way it is. And
exactly. And I think, you're a supporter at the end of the day, you know. You know, again, I'm not a Khan apologist, but what good is it doing to be negative? We had an amazing season last year. You know, you can't criticise the transfer window in the summer, considering the amount of players in and out they had to do. You know, they messed up with the striker, and in January they didn't bother. But you know, we weren't finishing the top two anyway, because the damage wasn't what we did in the last 6 months after January. The damage was done in the first few months when we started slow. You know, that's why we didn't finish in the top two. And in reality, you know, Sheffield Wednesday spent about 30 million on five strikers and we had none. But so we haven't spent 30 million. They have. And they didn't get promoted either.
That's right.
So I don't think that's a valid argument to say, well, we didn't spend money, because, you know, Huddersfield couldn't have spent that much and they did get promoted. So
exactly.
I just think it's about finding the right players and the right characters to blend a team.
Finding the balance, my friend. You can spend money, but finding the right players. You have to have quality, and you do have to spend for quality, but you also have to find the, I guess you could say, the diamonds in the rough. I know people don't like that term, but you need to find players where other people aren't looking, and maybe you find a diamond. And I don't have a problem with them trying to do that. Low risk, high reward. That's the way I look at it. Okay, Danny, thank you so much for joining me today. To wrap up the show, just tell everyone how they can follow you on Twitter and find you on Friends of Fulham.
Yeah, so my Twitter is DannyBoy_FFC. I have a pinned tweet linking you directly to the Fofa views. They're all in one place on the forum. Or you can go on, you know, friendsoffulham.com, and, you know, the general discussion page is where most people go. And, you know, you'll see all the in news and, you know, all the, everything you want to know about Fulham is there. You know, join up and, you know, get involved in the debates, you know. We're a friendly bunch and, yeah, that's pretty much it, you know. It's all for Fulham fans everywhere.
Okay, fantastic, Danny. Thank you so much for joining me, but it is time to go. For Danny Smith, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.